page 420, we had a bit of a break with an interesting interlude last week, so now we're continuing. No, never. Never, Leia. I know Hannah was worried about you. Hannah was worried. What? Sorry? No, we knew such a thing existed, but we never saw this in such a depth and such a length of yes. Oh no, he does all kinds of shiurim, normal, ordinary shiurim also. Just one topic. He had a lot list of topics, and this was just one of them. Don't worry. All right. Interesting. Okay. So 2 weeks ago, as we're going through Parshas Mishpatim, and as we said, it's not easy, but it's good. So we did only a little bit so far, and every time I plan a lot, but we'll see how much we get through. It seems to take quite a while to get through, but we will, Emirat Hashem. And every few psukim is a different topic, as we see. So many halachas packed in to even one pasuk, which is incredible. And we're going to see that also. But before, so today, hopefully, what I would like to try and cover is two topics. Sorry. Up until, 420 page. Oh. 420. So we've already covered the Eved Ivri, the Jewish slave, the Amma Ivriya, the Jewish maidservant. And then we talked a little bit about murder, about if you murder b'mezid, intentionally, b'shoigeg, unintentionally, what happens, and the Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge. So we went through all of that. Now we move on, and in our pasuk that we're going to start today is in the middle of the page. It's pasuk Tesvav. So we're going to do first three psukim together, and then we'll move on after because they're sort of a unit. Tesvav, Teszayin, and Yudzayin. And let's see what this next topic is. Just to put a little bit of continuity, why this is over here is because we talked about murder and we said somebody who murders somebody, they are punished by the death penalty, right? In Torah we have capital punishment. And we discussed that already. We're not going to discuss it again how that works, but there's capital punishment. So here we are continuing with a few more laws which if a person transgresses, they get capital punishment. So let's see what these are here. So the next halacha, Pasuk Tezvav, says Umake aviv'imai, somebody who hits a father or a mother, mais yumas, he shall surely be put to death. The next pasuk says, v'gainev, we're going to go into it in a second, v'gainev ishu macharai, if you kidnap a person and you sell him, v'nimtza biyadai, and he is found in your possession, mais yumas, you shall surely be put to death. Again, capital punishment for kidnap. There's a few interesting details. You can see here that you have to have sold the person, and there has to be eyewitnesses that saw the person in your possession. Okay, so that's interesting. The third halacha that I want to see here that it says, umekalel aviv imay, if you curse your father or your mother, mais yumas, you shall surely be put to death. So now, the first question that comes from these three psukim is, it seems sort of like, almost like a chon, like somebody just threw everything in with no order. That's what it looks like. Because we're talking, if you saw the first one we read about, if you hit your parents, the third one was if you curse, and then in the middle we put kidnapping. Wouldn't it make more sense to put kidnapping either before or after both? So what's happening with that? And also, what is this about hitting your parents, cursing your parents, and for that you get capital punishment? What's going on here? Why are we taking parents out of the general category of all other people, so to speak? Because we do have halachas if you hit somebody, we have halachas if you curse somebody, we have halachas if you kill somebody. Here it seems that this becomes its own category. So that's what we have to understand, what's really happening here. Okay, so I'm going to show you something nice. So it says like this. First of all, the reason why we put the parent being hit and the kidnapping following each other, juxtaposed right near each other, and we put the cursing of the parents afterwards, is because the punishment that is given for somebody who actually hits a parent or kidnaps is the same, and cursing a parent is a more severe punishment. It's a different halacha altogether. Interesting. You wouldn't think so. You might think that hitting is worse than cursing. We do tend to use our mouth quicker than we use our hands, right? But in the Torah, it's much more severe to curse than to hit. Okay, let's understand even what's happening here to begin with, though. What are we talking about? If I just lift up my hand and I give my parent, hit them, does that mean I'm going to be put to death? So first of all, it explains like this. The Mefarshim explain we're talking about parents. This is the ultimate rebellion, so to speak, the ultimate ungratefulness. That's how the Sefer HaChinuch and the Rashbam, how they all explain. These are people who have brought you into this world, selflessly done everything for you, and you dare to show such ungratefulness. That's why this is taken out of the category of other people. Because if you hit another person, you're not put to death. If you curse another person, you're not put to death. But if it's your parent, you are. Another reason, it's not just ungrateful, but in this world, our parents represent God. So they are like the God for us, in a sense, because they bring us into the physical world. And when we hit or curse our parents, it's almost like serving idolatry. That's what it is. And for serving idolatry, you're put to death. So that's another interesting thing that the Mefarshim explain, why this is taken so seriously and specifically highlighted in this way and has a separate individual unique halacha. Okay, that's one thing. What is the punishment for the two lighter ones, the hitting and the kidnapping? So remember, we mentioned this last time a little bit. We went into the least severe of the four forms of punishment is chenek, which is strangulation. For whatever reason, that's considered the least severe. The more severe one is skila. Skila is stoning. It's actually more embarrassing also. It's done more publicly. And that is for the cursing, you are stoned. Now, how do we know? So let me share something with you. We did this last time also. These psukim are found here. But the Torah, we know, doesn't repeat. But certain halachas are mentioned in a few places. And every time it does tell us something, it means that there's something unique that we learn out of the different verses. So our pasuk said over here, umake aviv imay maisumas. Right, so if you strike, then you are put to death. There is another pasuk, and that's actually in Chumash Devarim, and there, I just want to see it exactly, it says like this. Let me just see what Rashi says. This is Pasuk Tes Vav, Umaka Aviv Imay. Okay, it's a bit hard in these Chumashim, I know, but okay. All right. Okay. Oh, I just wanted to tell you one thing from this Rashi. Sorry. Before we go to the next one, we'll learn all the different details. But this Rashi really tells us something interesting. He tells us that when you hit a parent, this was an important thing, it has to be that you actually cause a bruise. And some people say not just cause a bruise, but let blood. So if blood comes out and a bruise, that's when capital punishment can be, you know. It obviously has to be somebody over the age of Bar Bas Mitzvah, right? It can't be a child. We're talking about an adult who's obligated, who becomes, unfortunately, can be held accountable. We also know that as with all halachas, this has to have two witnesses, warnings. There's many, many different things that come into play for this to actually ever happen. Okay, so that's that. I want to just move on to the second part that we mentioned, the kidnapping. So the first part was the hitting. The second part is the kidnapping. And so we mentioned one more thing. I think we mentioned this last time. This is also why we are very careful not to, let's say, be a give a parent a haircut, or perhaps be a doctor for a parent if you don't have to. Because just in case you will let blood, especially a haircut is something which is such a small thing, so you don't give your parent a haircut, there's no reason, there's other people that can do that, because just in case you will actually let blood. I mean, you wouldn't be put deserve capital punishment, but you could see the severity of that. So therefore, you stay away. With a doctor, as we said, it's a little bit more complicated, because if you're the best doctor, why should your parent miss out? Then perhaps you are their doctor. But should there be any a dentist, anything, just have to be as careful as you can to only if really, really there's no choice. That it's interesting, in other words, that these halachas do have very practical ramifications in ways that we might not think. They stretch, so to speak.
The haircut is only for men or also for women? Well, we don't have this short hair.
We don't have this short hair. Well, some people do, Leah, but yeah. Depends how you're going to cut it. Look, you can cut it, but just be careful. But why should you? Why would you want to take the chance? You know, it's an interesting thing. So it's a, yeah, it's interesting.
Regardless of the parent, if it's a terrible parent and they actually do shocking things.
Oy vey. This is always a big discussion. Doesn't mean you can hit them. Cursing them, that's even harder. Let's get to that in a minute. Okay, because that's the one that we would think people would do more. Okay, we'll see. We'll see about that. All right. It's interesting how Torah looks at things, Sylvia. I know it's a good question. I mean, parents have their responsibilities and children have theirs, and it's not really connected. Do you know what I mean? It sounds...
They may want to force the child to do something...
So it doesn't mean you have to listen to them. That's not what it's saying. No. Cursing them is not it. All right, let's see. Let's see how we doesn't. And it doesn't mean you can't tell somebody else to take, you know, to so to speak, hold them accountable and perhaps to try and help you. You know, that's not maybe that's permissible, but for you to directly is much more problematic. Yeah. Okay. Let's see where we go on over here. Let's see the second one we said. V'goynev ishu mecharei. So, as we saw previously, these psukim, as we were just saying before, they're repeated a little bit. So I'll show you something interesting. So when we talk about v'goynev ishu mecharei, there is a pasuk in Chumash Devarim that says, ki yimotzei ish, if a man is found, goynev nefesh me'achiv, who is stealing, kidnapping a soul from amongst his brothers, then he is put to death. Mois yumas, he is put to death. Our pasuk says, v'gonav ishu machre, if somebody kidnaps a man and he sells him, he is put to death. So we learn from each one something different, right? As we saw last time, the same thing. Our pasuk tells us an interesting thing, because it says, if you find, ki yimotzei ish, goynev nefesh me'achiv. That's not in our pasuk. Our pasuk just says, v'goynev ish, if somebody kidnaps. So that shows us, even if a woman kidnaps. A woman is not permitted to kidnap, just like a man is not permitted to kidnap. Because the pasuk in Devarim says, if a man kidnaps. You might think, only a man, a woman can kidnap. Our pasuk says, doesn't identify the kidnapper. So I'm the one who's doing the kidnapping, right? So therefore, anybody is not permitted to kidnap. That's what we learned from our pasuk. But the thing that we learned from the other pasuk is an interesting one also, is that here it says, ki yimotzei ish goynev nefesh. Sorry, it says goynev ish. Our pasuk says if you steal a man. So you might think only if you kidnap a man. But the pasuk in Devarim says, nefesh me'achiv, a soul from amongst your brothers. That means even a woman. And it's interesting, in Rashi over there, any gender or an unknown gender. Interesting, quite progressive, but whatever it means. But whatever. So anybody who is kidnapped, you are held responsible. So nobody's permitted to kidnap, and you're not permitted to kidnap anybody else. Okay, that's what we learned, so to speak, from the repetition of the psukim. And as we said, a very interesting thing. When it talks about v'nimtza biyodai, that it's found in your hands, so we need witnesses. Right, so you would think that perhaps that means that when the witness comes to court, they have to come to court when that person is still in the hands of the kidnapper. And only then can the kidnapper be put to death. But that's not the case. Because what did we say? What does the kidnapper do? He sells the person he's kidnapping. So Rashi tells us we have to understand that, even though it's not clear, but we must understand that what the pasuk means is that there was a witness to the fact that this person who kidnapped had the kidnapped person in his hands. Somebody saw them with them, and afterwards somebody saw them selling, then the witness can come to the Beis Din. It doesn't matter if the person doesn't have him anymore, obviously, because he sold him. But if there was a witness that he was there at one point, that's good enough, that's enough, and then he can be put to death. That's it. Now, very interesting. Let's go to the next pasuk, and we'll see a little bit more also. Before we do the next pasuk, I didn't make a copy because we have a lot of other copies. I want to read you something very interesting from the Rabbeinu Bechaya. I'll just read and translate, that he tells us about this idea of kidnapping. What's so severe? Even though we said the punishment is the same, but what's the connection between kidnapping and hitting a parent and cursing a parent? Where does it come in? So he said, Masha nichnas hakosav hazeh bein make umekalo, the fact that the pasuk puts this halacha between hitting and cursing of the parent. Kosav ha-goin Rabbeinu Sadja, so Rabbeinu Sadja goin writes, lefi sheroiv ha-nignovim heim ktanim. Most people who are kidnapped as children. That's the more common occurrence to happen. And what happens? U'kishechoizrin achar zman. And then later on when they come back, let's say they find their parents again, after many, many years of being separated, they don't recognize their parents. They don't know them. They have no relationship with them. Umakin, they hit. Umekalalin, and they're the ones who can curse Oysam, their parents. Now, it's not their fault, you would say. So he says something interesting. We're not talking about the child here. Here, we're trying to understand where the kidnapper comes in. So he explains, Vihine ha-goinev sibahu shemaka umakalo. What is causing the child to be so rebellious, so to speak, or not to have that feeling for their parents? Because they were kidnapped. The kidnapper is the cause of all of this trouble. And because of that, Al-Kain Ro'i she'yechuyav misa. That's why it makes sense for somebody who kidnaps to be put to death. Because, in other words, the effect of kidnapping is very long term. It's an interesting thing. It's a very fascinating idea. Again, you think, like, who kidnaps? I don't know. Recently, I was on the plane and it was shocking. I don't think it's a new documentary, but these twins, I don't know if you ever saw the study they did in New York, these twins, it was triplets. It was the worst. So they separate these scientists, they decided they wanted to study what's more, nurture or nature. So they took it upon themselves, they separated them at birth without telling the parents. Unbelievable, just happened. And some of them, they're not even reunited, it said. Some, a few. Anyways, these crazy things, unfortunately, can happen. That's also true. But anyways, the point is that we know that could be from that. That's a form of kidnapping. That really is. I don't know. I'm not a Rav, but it is a type of kidnapping. There are other stories. We have many, unfortunately, people, again, it's not... Men, unfortunately, there are stories, people think they're doing the right thing, they're doing very much the wrong thing.
Can't take a baby on a child on a plane, is it out
of the bus? That's it. Yeah, it's in South Africa, they have that rule. Here also, birth certificate, ooh la la. Okay, interesting.
Esther, they were going to South Africa for pace.
Yeah, South Africa, they have, yeah. Yeah, because South Africa has this thing that not only is the passport, but you need the birth certificate, which I don't really get because you can't get a passport without a birth certificate. But South Africa is a very interesting country. Anyways, but yes, that's it. Exactly right. Okay, full of Genevis, that's for sure. Okay, so that's what we see over here. You can see how it's so severe, if you want to say, and the long-lasting effects. Okay, now let's see. I want to just go back now. That's what it says. Yes, because look at the effect. That's exactly right. This is exactly the way to put it. Yes, he should, if we say, bear the sin, because his effects are so long lasting, what he's doing. Yes, so that's what we see. Okay, let's see now in the next pasuk, in pasuk Yud Zayin, what does it tell us? It tells us, Umekalel aviv imay moisumas, right? So if you curse your parents, you shall surely die. So I just want to say one thing. Why is this one a more severe punishment? So one thing we say, because cursing is worse. It's more humiliating. Hitting is just a hit. a curse is much, we know the power of the mouth, it's much, much worse. When we're talking about cursing, we are talking about using Hashem's holy name, not just talking about saying something negative. It's Hashem's holy name in the curse, that again, witnesses, warnings, there's a lot of things to have the severe punishment, but obviously any form of cursing is not permitted. But to have the capital punishment, there's many different things that have to come into play. The other thing also that the Chachamim say, very interesting thing the Ramban says, he says the reason why Torah decided to give us more severe punishment for cursing, which we might think is a little bit less than hitting, because hitting causes physical damage, because he says cursing is something that we find more often. And because of that, the Torah wants to make sure to eradicate it. The way to eradicate it is to show that it's very severe. So when you show that it's even more severe, perhaps people will think twice or think a lot of times before they will engage in this kind of behavior. So that's another thing the Ramban says, why it's more severe, so to speak. Now this one also has another pasuk, and that's in Chumash Vayikra. In Chumash Vayikra it says, Ish, ish, a man, asher yikalel es aviv, who will curse his father, mois yumas, shall surely be put to death. Again, over there we see again a few little issues, because there it says, ish, ish. And here it doesn't determine who's doing the cursing. So this shows us that even a woman who curses, right? Otherwise you might think only a man who curses. Even a woman who curses, her parents are also put to death. But so then the question is, why does it say ish, ish? Why does it have to say that? So Rashi says an interesting thing, to exclude a child. Because a child under the age of Bar and Bas Mitzvah are not, obviously if they do it, it's not the right thing, but they're not held the same accountable. So that's why we make sure to say we're talking about an adult, but it can be any kind of an adult. The other thing is in Vayikra, there's another two words that says damav bai, which means that he has forfeited his life. Damav bai is how we know that he gets the punishment of stoning. Because mais yumas on its own is chenek, strangulation. Damav bai, that already makes stoning. We know that from another halacha where it says it, and that's how we know. So all different things that we learn from the different places, the extra few words that come there. Okay, I think that's all for these three psukim. Okay, now we are going to move on. The next set of psukim are like 10 or 11 psukim. This part is complicated. What do I mean by complicated? Well, complicated in the sense that the halachas are complicated, and we will definitely not learn all the halachas, but the psukim themselves are a little bit out of order in a sense. So we'll pass down, I'll show you. What I'm going to do is, I'm going to actually read very quickly through the psukim. You're very welcome. We might not understand them, but I just want to read it very fast. Then we're going to look at the sheets I've just given you, because these sheets are from the Rambam, not Chumash, but the Rambam gives us a few halachas that makes it clearer for us to understand what's going on. And then we'll come back and we'll see how it works in the psukim, because we'll have more of an understanding. So I'm sorry, I gave you the sheets, but first, look in your Chumash first. I just want to, we'll very quickly read through the psukim, and I'll show you what we're going to be talking about here is damages. It's called damages. It's payments that you have to do if you hurt somebody, if you damage somebody. And there are many, many, many intricate halachas. It's like compensation that you have to pay for, and there's five components. It's not clear exactly. So let's see from the psukim, and then we'll see a little bit clearer from the Rambam, and we'll go back. Okay, so in Pasuk Yud Ches 18, right, it says, it's still on page 420. V'chi yirivun anoshim. If two men are fighting, right, so they're arguing, they're in a quarrel. V'hika ish es re'ehu, and one man hits his friend, be'even oy be'egreif, with a stone or with a fist. Everything is very exact in the words. But, thank God, v'layamus, so he didn't kill the person, okay? So he didn't, that's a very important part. But v'nafa l'mishkav, but he falls into bed. So he's incapacitated for a while. He's done some type of damage to him. We don't know exactly what, but he's definitely in bed. What happens? Im yakum, if he gets up, v'hishalech b'chutz, and he's able to go outside, walk outside, al mishantai, on, as we say, under his own power. In other words, I guess he doesn't need a wheelchair or whatever it may be. V'nake hamake, then the one who has hit is not obligated. It's, so to speak, clean, cleansed, absolved, if you want to say. Rakshifta yitain. Very unclear here, but what is, we see something. He's absolved, but what is he not absolved from? So he's not absolved from shiftai, meaning the time that the person has to be in bed. So the lost time at work, right? That's what shevis is. And rape yirape, and the doctor bills. Okay, so you have to compensate for the doctor bills, and you have to compensate, so far we see, for the time off of work, the incapacitated time. We're going to have to see how you decide that, and let's see the next pasuk. Very interesting halachas here that the Torah gives us. V'chiyake ishes avdai. Now it goes a little bit slightly off, but doesn't matter because we're going to learn from all of them. The whole thing becomes one way of understanding. If somebody hits their servant, and remember we mentioned this, this is not talking about a Jewish servant, we're talking about a non-Jewish servant. Oyes amasai, or his maidservant, bashevet, with a stick. Specifically, vameis umeis, and they die tachas yodai, under his hand, nakim yinakim, then he shall surely be avenged. Okay, this is interesting because usually, sorry.
So is this just if someone's going out of their way to hurt someone, or if it's a mistake?
Ah, that's a very good question. So you know what? Excellent question. So in the first pasuk, we're really talking about intentional. he is intending to do some type of damage, obviously, but we're going to see, even if it's unintentional, we'll see how that works. But that's a very good question. Let's see a few more psukim and we'll see. It's like all one unit. But yeah, so sorry. I'm just going to get a tissue. So here we're going to go, we're going to see. So now we're talking, as we said, about the non-Jewish maids. Remember, we read this when we were doing about the servants. But he says over here, achim, oh, so we're talking about avenging, because usually a non-Jewish servant doesn't have anybody to avenge them. You realize, because they don't have relatives in town. So here, this is a very interesting thing that Torah holds you responsible. Again, putting into context, in those days, a slave was considered your possession. If you do damage to your own possession, you would think, that's my business. Torah says, it's not your business, this is a human being, and therefore, you are held responsible. So this is a very important halacha in the context of the times that it was said, as we said, and the times it was kept. Okay, ach im yoyim o yoyimayim yamid. But what happens if he doesn't die right away? Let's just say if he survives for a day or two. V'layukam. Then he is not avenged, kikas by who, because he is your possession. Okay, we're going to discuss it later, but I want to just move on to see. V'chiyinatsu anoshim. Now, you asked what happens if it's not intentional. So let's say two people are fighting. V'nagvai isha hara. Oh, this is an interesting scenario happens. And in the middle, a lady walks by. It could be the wife of one of them or just somebody else, and she's pregnant. And she walks by while the two men are arguing, fighting, right? They have a stone in their hand, whatever they have. V'yatsu yiladeha, and then what happens? Unfortunately, she miscarries. So they hit her instead of the other person. They didn't intend to hit her. She was not the intended target, but they did intend to hit. See, this is an interesting thing. So here we have a very interesting scenario. Hitting was intentional, but she wasn't the one that was supposed to get hit. And she did suffer damage. The damage was that she miscarried. Anosh ye anosh, right? So what happens? Definitely, he shall surely be punished. Kasher yoshis alav bal ha'isha, when the husband of the woman will cause him to be assessed. In other words, the husband's going to take him to court, so to speak, and hold him responsible. Balat v'nosan b'flilim, and they shall pay it by the order of the judges. Very interesting. Again, we're doing this very superficially now. Just want to see the psukim. But what you see here is that you cannot take the matter into your own hand. This has to be done in a court of law. You can't just take revenge. You have to go to a court of law and have the whole thing assessed properly. Then the next one, v'im asan yihye. Then what happens if there is a fatality? So in other words, not the fetus, but let's say the woman dies, right? Yi v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh. Now we come to the famous verses that we know, unfortunately, that have been made public through the more through the Muslims, the soul for a soul, right? So let's see, soul for a soul is not so bad, but let's see what he goes on. The Pasuk tells us, and we don't even understand what that means, a soul for a soul. Do we kill somebody because somebody else died, or do we not kill somebody if somebody else dies? Tyre does have capital punishment, do you remember? So we say the only time that somebody could be put to death is if they premeditated murdered somebody, right? Intentional to murder that person with two witnesses, right? And been warned. Here, he didn't intend to kill that woman. Do you remember? He intended to hit, but he didn't intend to kill that woman. So very interesting. Nefesh tachas nefesh, soul for a soul. Ayin tachas ayin, an eye for an eye. Shein tachas shein, a tooth for a tooth. These are the psukim from the Torah. Unfortunately, very, very famous, known, but not understood properly. Yad tachas yad, a hand for a hand. Regel tachas regel, a foot for a foot. And then he goes on, kviya tachas kviya. So each of these things, it's a burn for a burn, petza tachas petza, if you want to say a wound for a wound, and chabura tachas chabura, a bruise for a bruise. Does that mean you bruise somebody, they bruise you back? Is that what it means? You burned, you get burned. What does it mean? This is not so easy to understand, these psukim, and we have to qualify them to really, really understand what it is. There's a few more, so it was just two more psukim. Okay, but it doesn't matter. We can stop over here anyways, because the next one is not so important for these halachas. So I just want to share one beautiful thing before we go into the Rambam, and we'll see a little bit what it means. So the Vilna Gaon says beautifully, has a very beautiful way of explaining ayin tachas ayin. The word ayin tachas ayin is eye under an eye. If you want to say for, what would you say? Lay, what would be a better way?
Lay.
Yeah. Or ba'ad, or yeah, right? Exactly. Lit or ba'ad. Eye for an eye. The Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says ayin tachas ayin. If you take the Hebrew alphabet and you take the letters that follow each one, so let's say like this, the ayin, the yud, and the nun. I'll see it inside. I'll show you something very beautiful. I should have made a copy. I didn't think that we would do that today, but can't knock. So then we'll go into the Rambam. So I'll tell you how he says like this. So if you take the letters that go under ayin, so you have like this. After ayin, what letter comes in the Hebrew alphabet? Pei. Okay. After a yud comes a kaf. After a nun, samach. Kesef. Kesef is money. We don't believe in an eye for an eye, literally. We believe in financial compensation. And this is a very, very big chunk of a lot of the Gemara that they learn. It's all about how we assess all these damages and how do we assess how much financial compensation and when and who and how do you pay all of this financial compensation. Ayin tachas ayin means an eye for an eye, the value of the eye for the eye.
So why is it
always, Leia, always. Otherwise, what would be the fun? Yes, well, to be honest, because what the I'll tell you why. It's just like with karbonis. When the person gives that financial compensation for that eye, what he should be thinking is, and what he should be feeling, is that really, it's my eye that should come out. In Hashem's kindness and grace, he allows me to give the money instead. But really, why should I have an eye if I took out his eye? Do you understand, Leah? So really, it should be, in other words, that when we hurt somebody in any way, when we cause any form of damage, we have to realize the severity of what we are doing in any form. And that's what we see here. That's what's very important. It's just a kindness of Hashem, really, that he allows us to give the money instead. Okay, so it's an interesting thing. That's really what it is. Okay, let's see a little bit of the sheets that we have in front of us to understand orally, and then, as we say, probably next week in Mirza Hashem, we'll go inside to understand how it works. Yes, in the psukim. Okay, so let's understand, first of all, with the damages. This is from the Gemara, it gives us, and Rashi also, everything is derived from these psukim and from a few other psukim in Chumash, Vayikra, and Dvarim, but a lot from these psukim, that there are five types five components of compensation. So let's see. So he says, I'll read you here this one in the Hebrew on page one. Hachayvel b'chaveire, when a person injures a colleague, chayev l'shalim loy chamisha dvarim ve'eluheim. You're liable to compensate him in five ways. What are the five? These are famous five things called nezek, which is the actual damage. You hurt his hand. We're going to go into them. Tsar, the pain. Ripoy, which is the medical, yes, the medical treatment. Sheves is the fact that he can't work, so he's out of work for the while. And Boishes is the embarrassment. It's very interesting because I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, but I don't know that that's taken into account in legal, in secular law, but embarrassment is a very big part. And actually, there is a financial component that a person is made to pay for embarrassment. We pay all five, but not always. If we didn't do actual damage, just embarrassment, we can just pay embarrassment. So it doesn't have to be all five or none. It can be one, two, three, four, or all five, depending on the circumstance, what you've done. So here, let's see a little bit more to understand how this works. So nezek ketzat. First of all, what is meant by damages? So im kata yad chaveiroi iraglai. So if a person cuts off the hand or the foot of a colleague, and he says rayan isa kilu hu eved nimkar bashuk. This is the famous way that we establish the financial worth of a hand or a foot. So he says, so we theoretically consider the injured colleague as a servant being sold in the marketplace, and then we see, as he says, kama hu yofa az, how much he would have been sold for then when he had his foot. The kama hu yofa ata, and how much is he worth now that he doesn't. Umeshalim hapachas shehivchis midamav, and you have to pay the difference. What, in other words, how much you've diminished the value of that person. Now again, we realize, and Torah says, there is no monetary possible to pay for any part of a human being. However, we have to somehow limit it and give a certain amount. So this is the way the Torah formulates. Again, really it should have been our hand and our foot coming off. But just because the Torah is kind, so we do this. This is the way, and it has to be some system. So this is the system that's used. And he says that we learned this from the pasuk on ayin tachas ayin, as we say, that you pay money. Let's see on page number two. See a few of these. Then he says, the fact that when the Torah says, Zeshenemar b'Torah kasher yitein mum ba'adam, kein yinasein bay. So in Vayikra, again, there's another pasuk that sounds also like you have to do to the person what they did. Just as he caused an injury to his fellow man, so too an injury should be caused to him. That's what it says. So he says, we shouldn't take it literally. Eino lachbal bazeh kama shechavo b'chaveirai. Ella shehu ra'i l'chasrei eiver ay lachbal bay kasher asa. So he says you shouldn't take it literally. It doesn't mean that the person who caused the injury should be actually subjected to a similar physical punishment. Rather, what do we say? We say We say that his intent is that he deserves to lose a limb or to be injured in the same manner, and therefore he should make financial restitution to him. As we said, you should imagine as if that's what's being done to you. That's what really should be done to you, as we say. And therefore you have to. So that's very interesting. We see that because only a murderer is actually killed, nobody else is, right? That's what the pasuk tells us. Let's see Dalit. And then he says, what happens? A very fascinating halacha here. This is really not to do so much, but just interesting how Torah is, the justice system is quite amazing. It says, when you're talking about the person who injures, right, a colleague and causes him damage, we say, do not have compassion. Interesting. What does it mean, do not have compassion? We're talking about on the person who has caused the damage. What does that mean? B'tashlomin shema taimer on you. You might say, oh, nebach, he's such a poor person. He doesn't have money to compensate, right? V'shalei b'kavon chavabai. Maybe he didn't even intend to hurt him so badly. Arachamenu, I'll have mercy on him. L'kach nemar, l'isochei seinecha. So no, you are responsible. Doesn't matter your financial situation. Well, you shouldn't have done it to begin with, so to speak. In Torah, we have a concept of misplaced compassion, which is considered a terrible thing. So this would be a case of misplaced compassion. Okay, let's go to Hay on page number three. Now, how do we know, very interesting, The question, interesting, how do we know that it's financial restoration? Right? So we say, yeah, why shouldn't it say it clearly? But how do we know that it is financial? So the Rambam says an interesting thing. Maybe it's tak an eye for an eye. So he says, because it says a blow for a blow, right? And we know that when we're talking about blowing, so perish, hurting somebody, right? We read in the pasuk that if you hit somebody with a stone or with your fist, then what do? You pay for compensation for his work loss and you pay for his doctor. It doesn't say you should get hit. So you know it doesn't mean literally that you get hit. What do you know? That when it's talking about tachas, that a wound or a hit for a hit, it means payment. That extends to the whole thing then. That means also with the eye, that when he uses the word tachas, it means financial compensation. So we see how Torah works. It learns from all the, so you have to learn, look at it all as a unit, not one pasuk in isolation. Now let's see. Now we have interesting questions. How do you know that you have to pay for unemployment on its own, v'ripui b'fnei atzmai, and medical expenses on its own? Shenema rak shifta yitain v'rapa yirapai, because the pasuk specifies you pay for shiftai, the person has to be out of work, he has to rest, and you have to pay for his doctors. Today we're not going to, I wish we would, but there's a very beautiful concept about this rapa yirapai, which we will get to, about do you go to a doctor? The whole idea of going to a doctor, because it sounds crazy, because we do go to doctors. But in Torah, there is a question. Who says we should go to a doctor? Maybe we should just daven. Maybe we should go to the prophet. Maybe we should just go to shul and cry to Hashem to cure us. Who says we have a right to actually go to a doctor? We just take it for granted. Of course we have to go to a doctor. How do we know? So the pasuk tells us, because it says, v'rapa yirape, that you shall be surely be healed and you should pay for his medical expenses. Must be that a doctor's okay. Otherwise the Torah wouldn't tell you that you have to compensate him for his medical expenses. We have to understand how that works philosophically, where a doctor comes in and where a doctor doesn't, because it's a very beautiful story that the Gemara tells us, that there is two great chachamim walking and one person is not so well, and he asks them, should I be going to a doctor? And they say, yeah, you should go to a doctor. They say, why? But didn't Hashem create the world, and can't he just cure me? You know, so if I go to a doctor, I'm interfering with Hashem's, you know, act, where he made me sick, he should heal me. So they said to him, listen, do you plant in your field, or do you just wait for the oranges to come up from nowhere? Didn't Hashem make oranges? So they explained to him, I think it was Rabbi Akiva and another of the great Tanaim, that sometimes what Hashem put into place is that there are means and ways by which he operates in this world. And the way that people get healed in this world are through a doctor, just like a farmer does the planting. But that's not enough. We're going to see how that really works. Okay, we'll leave a little bit suspense. Let's a little bit more of these halachas to understand, and then we'll go, sure. Yeah.
So
that's a very, it's a good question. So generally, yeah, it's an interesting question. Because in Torah, not necessarily do we take into, if the person's responsible to pay, they're responsible to pay whether they have or they don't. And you're right, the dent is going to be bigger on the poor person than it will be on the wealthy person. 100%. So that's where, very interesting, Sylvia, that's where we believe, and we'll see it comes through. There's also another component. There's also a God. Okay, and we believe that Hashem also takes account, right? So therefore, if a person is very wealthy and they've damaged somebody else, now you and I might not see it, but Hashem holds him accountable. So if his suffering is not enough, so to speak, Hashem will take care of it. Do you understand? There are certain things that we have to rely that Hashem, because even, you know, in Torah we have things like, if you do something wrong but there's no witnesses, you understand? What's going to be then? You get a scot-free? No, we don't believe in scot-free. Because the truth is, that Hashem runs the world. But these are just halachas in order to keep, as we say, the way that people should behave. That's the idea. It's like discipline in a classroom. That's the idea. It's just to have a system in place. But ultimately, the real punishments and the real rewards come from Hashem. So, and he's the only one that can really, yeah. So it's an interesting...
Grind slow but fine.
That's a good line. It's a good one. Yeah, Rona, that's right. Okay, we'll see a little bit more here. Just a few more halachas here. Let me just see. So now on the bottom of, page 3. So if when a person injures a colleague in a manner that warrants payments of all 5 assessments, he's required to pay all 5. Then we said 4, 2, so it's not dependent. In other words, not 5 or nothing. It's whatever he has done. Let's see a little bit more. So now, if just like an evaluation is made in regard to death, so too an evaluation is made in regard to damages. So let's see how he says, a very interesting thing, because when we talk about death, you have to know if the person intended, right? Had a lot interesting. So he says, what is implied on page 4? If he strikes a colleague with a small stone that is not large enough to cause injury, or a small sliver of wood and causes an injury that this article is not ordinarily capable of causing, he's not liable. So you see, it has a lot to do with intention. That's Torah takes into account. And this the court of law will be able to see. And that's why we have a very interesting thing. Look, it says in the next paragraph, accordingly, the witnesses have to know the article that caused the injury. This article should be brought to the court, and an evaluation is made concerning it and a reckoning. So it's all done with a lot of investigation. Let me see. Very interesting also that to do with embarrassment, but just want to see. All right, let's see now, go on to page number 5. What happens, okay, so here's a bit more exact, okay, so he gives like a exact how it works. He says, what is implied? If a person cuts off a colleague's hand or foot or a finger or a toe, he must pay all 5 assessments, the damages, the pain, the medical treatment, his loss of employment, and the embarrassment he suffers. Sounds quite disgusting, but okay, let's see. If he's stuck him, it could happen in any way. I mean, well, what? No problem, Kana. We can skip it. No, it just shows us. Okay, it doesn't matter really. It's not important. It just shows us how that you can only pay for what you've exactly done. Let's go to number 6. Page number 6. Okay, I want to show you something very fascinating on page 6. Because this is an interesting one, again, a very gray area. A person who scares a colleague. This is fascinating. I'll tell you, this is the Rambam. Okay, so this is really from a long time ago. Yes, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, when they had the capital punishment.
Not only after they moved into Israel.
That's right. It wasn't for very long that they were able to actually. Only when there was a big Sanhedrin of 71, yeah, only then could you. Yeah. Then it stops. Well, some people will say not so who, but yeah. Anyway, so let's see. Oh, no way. No way. They can barely do anything today, but definitely no. There's no capital punishment anymore. Let's see number 7. But we can make somebody obligated to pay for something, yes. Damages can be, Seriously, really?
Interesting.
It's a hard one. It's a very hard.
Yeah, but if you're coming and killing, then what do you mean? You can't just...
Yeah.
Families after families.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a big problem as well. Okay, let's see what he says over here. If a person scares a colleague, even if the fright causes him to fall ill, it's interesting, is not liable according to the judgments of an earthly court. Here we have this, Sylvia. Okay, so based in, because this is very, very hard to assess, as we know. He does, however, have a moral and spiritual obligation to compensate him. This applies, however, only when he did not touch him, but merely shouted behind him, appeared before him in the darkness, or the like. Then the Beis Din can't do anything. But if he wants to be a good person, he will compensate, right? He will. Anyway, similarly, if a person shouted in a colleague's ear and caused him to become deaf, he is not liable according to the judgments of an earthly court. He does, however, have a moral and spiritual obligation to compensate him. If, however, a person grasped hold of a colleague and blew a horn in his ear and caused him to become deaf, touched him or pushed him when he frightened him, took hold of his clothes or the like, then he's obligated to pay compensation, even according to the earthly court. So there has to be some physical touch, just because it's otherwise impossible to assess, as we see. Okay, let's go to, so I just wanted to see how you just evaluate, there was two that were interesting, the pain and the embarrassment. Okay, if you look at the next page, which is page number 7, if you look at number 10 on page number 7, number 9, let's see pain. What compensation must be paid for pain? It all depends on the nature of the injured party. This is fascinating. See, it has a 9 on the top of the page, a little 7 in the middle there. Here, we're going to see this different between different people. So he says, there are certain people who are delicate, spoiled, and wealthy, and would not bear even a slight amount of pain for a large amount of money. And there are people who are very heavy laborers, strong and poor, and will bear much suffering for a single zuz. These are the factors that are taken into consideration when evaluating and determining the compensation for pain. So it does matter on the pain threshold, depending mostly on the person's circumstances, which according to Torah, that's what gives a person more ability to take pain. It's quite a fascinating thing.
Can you refer this to the car accident?
I imagine it would, but I don't know how it works. Yeah, I would imagine they would have a little bit more of a specific way of figuring it out nowadays, but yeah, it's not simple. To make differences is much harder nowadays, for sure. Yeah. Then number 10, it says, how is the pain evaluated? Let's say if there's a loss of limb, sorry, Chana, he says, so if we evaluate it in a very interesting way, we say to the person, how much would you pay to have less pain? It's a fascinating thing. So like if you're having an operation, how much would you pay to have better anesthesia? So if you're going to pay for more, that means that to you, pain is a terrible thing, right? So you value, like in other words, for you, it's worth it to pay rather than not to have the pain. So you have to be compensated with more. But somebody who says, I'll have a lower level of anesthesia, well, then they don't have to be compensated as much. So it's interesting and fascinating. It's all very interesting how this works. And then unemployment is also, how do you do the unemployment? So he says, if he did not cause the person to lose, okay, so he just, let's say you cause somebody to become sick, right, an invalid, or his arm swelled but will return to its original size, the person who caused the injury must pay the victim for his unemployment for each day, like an unemployed worker of the trade in which he is employed, okay? So here you're paying, like if the person is, yeah, whatever, so if he's a doctor and he gets paid a certain amount, obviously it's going to be more than if the person is, I don't know, working in Kohl's, right? So they get a lower salary, so you'd less compensation. But there's a fascinating thing. If there is a damage that's for good, right? So you've done something terrible to him in that way, then we judge him, the fascinating thing, we judge him as if he were a guard at a patch of squash, which is a cucumber patch, which is quite a low-paying job. This is because this is for good. So the actual compensation will not be very high, unfortunately. So even if the person is a top doctor, they're not going to get paid according to that compensation. It's quite an interesting thing. These are all different things. But the person doing it's fascinating. He says, number 14, show you something interesting. How is the assessment for medical bills evaluated? So we estimate how many days this ailment will last and what will be required to treat it. The person who caused the injury is required to give the sum immediately. We do not require him to make payments day by day. This is an enactment in favor of the person who caused the injury. It's interesting. That's it. The Rambam is showing that this favors the one who's doing the damage. It's interesting because we have a very fascinating thing. What happens if the person takes longer or costs a little more? He doesn't have to pay them more if that's what they figured out at the beginning, unless he chose to pay it day by day. Then he will have to continue. It's an interesting thing how, I guess each case is decided and discussed and formulated in accordance to each case. So that's a big question, yeah. Also responsible, doctor, if they decide that he wasn't, yeah. Yes, we know, unfortunately. We know, so. Insurance. Yeah, that's for sure. Look, the doctor's insurance is very high, and that's also why they have to charge so much. In the States, that's the problem. It's a very big problem, but it's a big question. It's a big issue. I just wanted to show you one more interesting thing. Okay. Oh, also, I want to show you something interesting, though. When you pay for medical, I don't know how it is in the secular law, but in the Jewish law, you don't give it to the person. You give it to the court, and they give it directly to the doctors. There is a little bit of a fear that the person might use the money for something else and not pay for his medical care. And the Torah wants them to... Yeah, very interesting. Yes, fascinating thing. That was on the bottom of page 8. On page 9. Let's say if the person who caused the injury says, I will heal you, or I have a physician who will heal you without charge, his words are not heeded. Instead, he's required to bring a professional physician who charges for healing him. Then it goes through all the different ways. I just wanted to see. Oh, let's see the embarrassment. Because this is, yes, sure.
Is that just for, like, if it's in regards to health? Like, say you're bashing someone's car or something and you break it and you're a mechanic and you fix it?
Okay, so I think so. It doesn't seem to be that it would extend to that, but that's an interesting question. Interesting if it would make the difference to that way. I think you could fix it if the person agrees. But maybe if the person doesn't agree, he has a right to tell you, no, I can go to the other. You know, it's a fascinating, it's an interesting halacha question. Because you're right, that these things are all derived from, yeah. So it's interesting how they apply. I just want to show you, go to the bottom of page 9, Chayvel Umazik, so chapter 3. It says, how is the assessment for embarrassment evaluated? This is even harder. Everything depends on the character of the person who causes the embarrassment, and that of the one who is embarrassed. Now, this is not politically correct, but in Torah there is a difference between who you're embarrassing and who's doing the embarrassment, because the shame is felt more or less. That's a fact. So here he gives an example for the embarrassment caused by a child cannot be compared to the embarrassment caused by a respected adult, since the embarrassment caused by the noble one is greater. I don't know, it's interesting if what that means, if the child's one is greater or the adult is greater, but look, the Beis Din decides, but there is a difference. If somebody is a Talmud Chacham or a leader or a very important person in the community or very well known and they are embarrassed publicly, it would be a higher compensation for his embarrassment than if somebody is unknown or if somebody, whatever, all different things, fascinating, or the one who's doing the embarrassing also makes a big difference. That's right, exactly, Leah, exactly. That's a good 100%. And that's what it says. Yes, so if somebody embarrasses somebody publicly, it's mamish as if you've committed murder. And that's why we say that embarrassment, this part of the compensation, again, is like ayin tachas ayin. You really should think that it's nefesh tachas, that it's really your soul. That's what actually it says. I forgot one of them first to say exactly what you're saying. That's mamish your soul. Because you caused embarrassment, really, you should be put to death. That's really how it should be. Lucky, you can just compensate financially. Yeah, so it's quite a strong part of it. I just wanted to see. Okay, that's all for this. Time is up. I'm sorry. It was a bit